It's somewhere out there. My country. My home. My wife is preparing food. My daughters carry water from the river.
Will I ever see them again? I think no.
Do you believe you'll see them again when you die?
I think so. But then, I will die soon. They will not die for many years. I'll have to wait.
But you would wait.
Of course.
You see, my wife and my son are already waiting for me.
You'll meet them again. But not yet. Not yet. Yes.
Not yet.
So hi and welcome to the Unnamed Movie Podcast. This is Andrew.
This is Douglas.
And this is Damien.
And with us this week, we have our guest, Kevin Ketchum. He's on... Hey Kevin, how are you doing?
I'm good.
He has a film blog that he doesn't update called Film Studies and Other Shenanigans.blogspot.com.
Are you just like me? I have like five websites that I don't update.
But if you really want to get the essence of Kevin, you have to follow him on Twitter. He's at Kevin K with two N's. So Kevin, an extra N, and K.
So he's exactly like Douglas.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Even though
apparently
Douglas...
Apparently Kevin with just one N was already taken.
Yes, I noticed because I just assumed it was Kevin K because that's how I read it in my Twitter feed. So I actually typed in the address and got someone else. And I was like, whoa, where did Kevin go? But you see, the difference with Kevin and Douglas is that Douglas is ignoring Twitter as much as he's ignoring his blog now because he has a job.
I plan on updating my blog this weekend once I've seen Rango. So there'll be a lot of reviews.
Oh, nice. I kind of want to watch Rango.
I've seen generally positive things out there for Rango.
I've seen it going positive and negative. I've seen it go both ways.
And Damon really? Shakes his head in this.
I've actually seen quite a bit. I've actually seen downright raves.
Yeah, me
like,
too.
On Twitter, like I've seen a couple of people that, you know, like they just, you know, people you would expect to not dig it, but most of the stuff I've seen has been pretty positive, saying like, you know, like that it's really sharply written, sharply, you know, well made and well voice acted. So.
Did
I'm excited.
Pixar do this movie? No, not interested.
How to Train Your Dragon? Did Pixar do that movie?
Yeah, there's an exception to every rule, Andrew. That's just math. What is wrong with
you? By the way, have you seen Tangled?
Me?
No, not you. Okay, Damon.
No,
okay, alright. I just was curious. Anyways, let's get into what we've been watching this week. Kevin, what have you been watching this week?
This week in particular, I've been kind of on a Tim Burton kick. Anybody knows me, like, knows I'm a fan of the guy, like, even though he's got, you know, some stinkers under his belt, you know, like, I think we can all agree on Planet of the Apes and Alice in Wonderland and, you know, a couple others being pretty awful. But no, I've been, you know, watching like the, you know, Batman Returns, Sleepy Hollow, Big Fish, Sweeney Todd, and Corpse Bride. And, you know, Ed Wood, ironically, is like the only one of all his like good ones that's not on Blu-ray yet. So it's the only one I don't own.
Because if it's not on Blu-ray, it's not worth owning.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I a couple years ago, I bought a PS3 because, to upgrade to Blu-ray because I, you know, like when The Dark Knight was coming out on DVD and Blu-ray, like it became clear that there was like three times as many features, you know, 3.5 hours of you know, behind the scenes footage and everything on The Dark Knight Blu-ray. And they also had like the IMAX scenes presented in their correct aspect ratio. And so for me, that was kind of like the deal breaker, like when I had to go Blu-ray. So I bought a PS3, and it was probably like the best investment I've ever made, but I'm so bad. Like, I rebought everything. Like, I've gone back and like my entire catalog is pretty much all Blu-rays now. And, but yeah, no, anyways, but back to Tim Burton. No, like I, you know, you like in this rewatch, like you kind of get the sense, like when he's on fire, he's really like firing on all cylinders. Like when he does stuff like the Batman movies or Ed Wood or Sleepy Hollow or Big Fish or Sweeney Todd, when he wants to make a movie, he really makes a damn good movie. But when he's in like remake mode, when like this, I feel like studios call him and are just like, hey, you know, we're looking to redo Sleeping Beauty. Could you make that look cool? You know, like, and you know, and I feel like he does stuff like that, like Planet of the Apes and you know, shit like Alice in Wonderland, where it's like it's still visually really cool, but it, you know, obviously like story wise it's just really awful. And I feel like he does that stuff so he can get like funding for the stuff he really wants to do. Like, you know, like Big Fish has always struck me as his most personal film, because he's, you know, it's known that he made the film as his own kind of like therapy to get through, you know, his parents' death. Like he didn't want to like deal with, you know, like going to a psychiatrist or a grief counselor or anything, but he made that. And you can see it in the film. Like he really, really put his heart and soul into that. And it's a three hanky weeper. It makes you cry at the end. You know, I think that emotionally wise is probably his most profound, and like there's a maturity and a sense of profoundness to that film that really, like, I don't want to say you don't get in his other films, because they're obviously like the ones I previously mentioned are all excellent, but that one really strikes me as when he really made something that was really important to him, and you sense that, like, it reminds me of how like Spielberg is kind of the same way. When he doesn't really have much of an interest in a movie that he's making, it shows in that movie. Like, you can get, because the movie itself is boring, because, you know, Spielberg himself was bored. You know, you can see that in The Lost World and in Indiana Jones 4. And with Tim Burton, you can see that in stuff like Alice in Wonderland. But like I said, like when he's really like on like his creative A game, it's really something to behold. Because I do think he's one of the greats out there. Like, despite kind of a bag recently, especially it's weird to go from like the high point of Sweeney Todd, which I think is probably his best film, and then go to something like Alice in Wonderland, which is just, you know, awful. And it's like, how does the same guy make these two films? But so yeah, that's pretty much what I've been watching. Other than that, like I bought Bambi and 127 Hours on Blu-ray on Tuesday, so I'm planning on. I watched 127 Hours again, and you know, I know like a lot of Twitter hates that movie, like, with a burning passion. I think it's brilliant.
I agree with you.
Yeah, I think James Franco like is just like incredible in the film, and it, you know, I know like Danny Boyle I think is becoming something of a divisive director because of his style, and I think it alienates some people because his movies are very highly stylized. But I think like if you're able to kind of, but I think a lot of people, they just don't dig it. Like, they don't dig his weird, you know, kind of like offbeat sensibilities. Like the way that, like, a lot of people I know hated Slumdog for the same reason they hate 127 Hours. They just can't stand his directing and editing and camera work. And, you know, it's like a lot of things, it's not for everybody, but I think if you're willing to kind of, like, I think, like, I guess, like, for me, 127 Hours, like, I did connect with the protagonist with Aaron Ralston a lot, so it speaks to me on a level that it doesn't for a lot of people, because I know Twitter, like I said, like a lot of people on Twitter like just absolutely loathe that movie, like they think it's awful, and I'm kind of wondering what movie they saw and what planet they're on, because I don't really get that, but you know, whatever. So, and then of course I'll be watching Bambi later this week, because you know, like, it's a classic, and Disney's really been outdoing themselves like over and over again with these Blu-ray releases of these old classics, like with the Diamond Editions especially, they're just like, they're killing it. They're killing it. And to see the restorations of these really old, you know, film, you know, it's like 60 to 70 year old films, even something much younger like Beauty and the Beast, like just the restoration and the care and dedication that goes into creating these packages like on Blu-ray is just, it's astonishing, and it's well worth the money. And like, and Disney always is really good about, like, on these catalog releases for the Blu-rays, like they offer these like $10 off coupons. So, you know, I was basically able to get Bambi on Blu-ray for like $12, you know, at Best Buy, which is pretty unheard of for a new release on Blu-ray. So that's what I've been watching. I'll probably, like I said, I'll be seeing Rango this weekend. Might check out The Adjustment Bureau. I've been hearing kind of mixed things about that, but I hear it's a solid movie, like not an excellent one, though. So that's what I've been watching.
Matt Damon is enough to get me to watch Adjustment Bureau.
Really? I feel the same way about John Slattery.
Andrew, you say that after two solidly bad movies.
I still haven't watched Hereafter, and I...
Oh, it's so awful.
And the rugby one, what was the rugby one again?
Invictus.
Yes. I actually didn't hate it completely.
Something's wrong
I did.
With you.
But anyways, Damien, what did you watch this week?
Alright, I'm just going to talk about a few things this week.
Someone sounds tired.
No. First, I went to see The Mechanic.
Really?
Yeah.
You went?
Yes, I went.
I figured that you might not go to watch it.
Thank you, Douglas.
What?
Now, before I talk about the movie, I need to... this is probably going to be the last time that I speak directly about Carib and Jamaicans. I'm just going to get it all out now. Carib is the worst establishment for watching movies, probably... in the history of the world. It is a dreadful, dreadful establishment. They started projecting the movie and then the screen closed, and at intermission they closed the screen again, and this time we had to wait about 20 minutes for someone to manually push the curtains open.
Oh wow.
which was fun. Jesus, it was fun, right, to see.
Were they playing the movie while it was still closed?
They started, and then I guess one of the ushers told them, hey guys, that the screen still is closed. All their theaters aren't HD, which, I mean, guys, I don't care how much the projectors cost, that is not my issue. I'm paying you the same amount of money to watch a standard def movie as I'd pay to watch a high def movie. Either you make standard def movies cheaper, or you don't show them at all. This is ridiculous. The sound is still garbage, which, again, guys, it's 2011. I'm pretty sure Logitech makes better speakers than are in Carib. It's a joke at this point.
Oh right. My goodness.
So, that's it with Carib. They're awful, and unless, like, I really want to watch a movie, I'm so not going back to Carib. Unless I get confirmation that's in HD, I'm not. I mean, not even as a joke. I don't care who it is. I don't care what movie it is. I'm not watching standard def movies at Carib anymore. And
watch when Mad Men Part 2 comes out.
Look, if
X-Men... Mad Men Part 2?
Not Mad Men. Whatever, any fanboy movie that this guy...
The Dark Knight Rises.
If X-Men comes out and they're not showing it in HD, I'm not going to care to watch it.
So when Sucker Punch comes out this month...
If it's not in HD, I'm not going to watch it.
Okay.
I'm very sick. I can't deal with it anymore.
Watchmen is what I was thinking of.
Watchmen. Yeah. The second thing is I really hate Jamaicans. At times it is hilarious when you look back and you go... But, you know, Jamaicans are really stupid. But I think they've taken it too far. Either they need to put a disclaimer on all movies with any gay situations in there. So that.
All right, hold on. I haven't seen the mechanic, but I totally want you to tell me this scene right now. All right,
so the setup is they're going to kill a rival hitman, and Ben Foster is sent to do some reconnaissance, and then he goes to a bar with this guy, and the guy offers to bring him home, and he goes along with him, and there's some light petting, and then the fight to the death, right? And the petting section, I don't think it's 50 seconds, I'm pretty sure. And everyone inside the theater just lost their shit. It was unbelievable. They're like, I want back my money because I never know this was going to be in the movie. And just this barrage of nonsense.
Wait, so does it need to be in a homosexual section?
Actually, yeah, they need to. Apparently. Honestly, they need to put a disclaimer in all of the movies. Never die,
Andrew. I mean, seriously.
Right? If there's any gay anything in the movie, just put it there so that I can know not to watch those movies either. At Carib. I can just go, oh, rock, okay. Jamaican's going to be here, and there's something gay in the movie, so I'm not going to enjoy the entire movie. I'm just going to leave.
And you know what's the funny part? I went to the theater to watch Black Swan, and we all know it has the infamous scene with Natalie Portman and Mila Kunis kind of going at it. The moment that scene came up in the movie, I heard all of the men just quiet and all of the women just start go crazy in that movie.
I mean, in this movie, like, everybody, literally, I couldn't hear what was going on the screen. And that is probably the best part of the entire movie. And
oh, God.
It was just ridiculous. I mean, look, I know I don't like gay people out here, and that is fine. Right? But I'm watching a movie. Can we, like, keep this shit to ourselves until the movie's over?
How long did they not the scene, but the crowd continue after that happened?
No, because they started fighting right after everybody
calmed down.
Kind of forgot that, oh, the guy was, two men were touching each other, which is the most racist shit we've ever seen in there. They're just unbelievable at this point. Now to the mechanic.
To the actual review.
Yeah, this movie's god-awful. I'm extremely, like, I don't know why I'm disappointed in the movie, because nothing said that this movie was going to be good.
I told you the movie wasn't going to be good.
But it is bad. It is bad in a way that I can't excuse. It's just...
So it's not even, like, so bad it's fun to watch and make fun of and drink to?
Literally, it is some of the worst dialogue I have ever witnessed in any movie. The guy who wrote the movie also wrote 16 Blocks. I think that's his previous.
I actually kind of liked 16 Blocks.
I do enjoy 16 Blocks. And I think Simon West is the director, and he did Con Air, which I enjoy.
I love Con Air.
Despite it not being a good movie.
It's a bad, awesome movie.
He also made Tomb Raider.
That's not
that. Sweet Mercy. He did that John Travolta, Lieutenant's Daughter or something. I don't remember. I'm trying to remember the name of the movie.
Skip. Just keep it.
I think I wrote it down somewhere.
Came with notes today.
Right. He did, The General's Daughter.
I don't think I saw that one.
Yeah, I saw that movie. One. Not very good.
Yeah.
Not very good. But this guy, he can't direct. I'm going to say no. He's bad at directing.
So the film's just, like, completely incompetent in every way.
Yeah, and the editing in this. All right. So let me explain how bad this movie is. In all Hitman movies, at the start of the movie, you must prove to the audience that this man is a hitman.
And a good one at that.
Right. And so you have him kill this guy. There's no explanation as to how he got into the house. There's barely an explanation as to how he got out of the house.
Is that the swimming? Is that the one in the pool? Because that's the one in the trailer.
Right. That's the one in the pool, right? And it is barely explained. Then he goes home and he burns all the evidence. and he walks out onto his front porch, and then he starts narrating his own movie. There's no flashback. This is what happened in the past, and I am telling you this story. No.
Slow down.
Right.
He's narrating as he's like walking around.
Right. So he's on his porch, and then you hear Jason Statham's voice, because he's not talking to the audience. You just hear his voice over the movie, and he's narrating the movie. So, and it only happens once.
So they basically pulled a crank on the whole thing?
No. But at least when you see Crank, Crank is, he's telling you the story, right? He's going into the past and telling you what happened. This movie is not that.
So it's basically like Jason Statham walking around narrating the movie for us.
Right.
And he's see Jason Statham like actually speaking.
He's not speaking. It's just his voice, his ominous voice, is talking to you. And then the title screen shows up. So it's like 20 minutes in, they're like, what in God's name is happening here? And this is one of the worst revenge movies ever. The movie is just, it is so bad. And it hinges on, the revenge story hinges on some of the worst. He finds out he's tricked, because of course all hitmen are tricked. And he finds out because a hitman that is supposed to be dead just happens to be walking through the bus station and going on to a bus. Right? Yeah. Now, the agency that he works for, knows that, these guys are hitmen. And they had one fake his death so that he could kill some guy he wasn't supposed to kill. And instead of putting the one person that could possibly tie any of that together on the other side of the planet, this guy's just walking randomly. we're really going down this road.
It's like, that's the best you could come up with.
At least I'll give the, as much as I didn't like the original, I'll give the original. It had a good
original
script.
Is like
it
wasn't written 1,000 times better.
It wasn't written. The story wasn't in a way that made sense.
And what is truly unforgivable is the fact that Ben Foster, he's wasted in this movie. Like, all his talents are...
Yeah, because normally he's, like, really good in everything.
Exactly. And he is really good in this.
I find it funny because I read an interview with Ben Foster talking about The Mechanic, and someone asked him, like, why did you do this movie? I mean, people have you up on this bar, you should be doing Ryan Gosling-esque
after
films.
Three-ten.
And he said, you know what, I've done all these movies, and I know I'm still growing, but I really just felt like blowing shit up this time, so...
In 3-10, I couldn't believe it. All right, this guy's probably one of the best actors we have.
Well, I mean, no, that wouldn't...
So you said that Ryan Gosling comment, was that like Farachi that you were talking about was saying that?
No. I'm not quoting anyone on who we should be, but you know, it's just, I was just thinking of a witty way to say that he's really good.
Yeah, like, he should be doing, like, indie dramas, not, like...
Shitty.
I mean, like, did you see The Messenger?
Yeah, I did. I love that movie.
It was fantastic. And he's fantastic in that. And it's like, how do you go from, like... But I guess he just wanted to do something fun. But
that is,
I mean, like,
he's not,
he couldn't have picked a better director?
He's not bad in the movie. The movie is... The movie that surrounds Foster.
Yeah.
Is just god awful, and
yeah,
I mean, it's I remember last year we saw The Losers and A Team, and we were asking you which movie had the better antagonist.
Bad guy.
This movie has
between A Team and Expendables.
Yeah,
no, between The Losers and
the A Team.
Oh yeah, because it's basically the same plot,
right? This movie has the worst. By far the worst antagonist that I've ever seen. He's like the least scary guy. It reminds me of when Philip Seymour Hoffman was in Mission Impossible 3.
I'm going to be quiet.
Really?
He's
the bad guy? Yeah, I'm sure he's going to win.
He had a couple of good scenes as the villain, though. Like when like when he's on the plane with Tom Cruise, and like, and he's basically like telling Tom Cruise, like, I'm gonna find your girlfriend and I'm gonna like torture her and kill her. Like, he's actually pretty like effective in that. Like, and I dig Mission Impossible 3 a lot.
Thank God someone's on my side.
But you knew the second Tom Cruise had to fight him, there was not going to be much of a fight.
Well, I mean, they made the fight even when it came around, kind of. You know, I'll be quiet. I'm going to be quiet. I've had this discussion with Damien numerous times, and it's not going to end well if we try this again.
Tom Goldwyn is the antagonist, and I like him. He's in The Good Wife. It's this CBS program that
Which
I enjoy.
This?
What's that?
Which actor is this?
Tom Goldwyn.
Tom Goldwyn. Is he related to Tony Goldwyn?
I have no idea.
Okay. Never mind.
But he's in The Good Wife. If you've ever seen it, you'll recognize him.
And yeah, probably. I've never actually seen it. I don't watch a lot of TV outside of like Mad Men and Dexter anymore, because like Lost, my favorite show of all time, ended already. So, you know, like, what do I have left? Mad Men and Dexter. And that's it.
Alright, I should just stop that. This movie's bad.
It's been going on for a while.
Yeah. The other thing I'd like to talk about is I saw How I Met Your Mother, the episode where what's his name, father dies, and
Marshall,
right? And that episode was really effective. It showed that
you're talking about the one where he actually died, or the funeral episode.
The funeral episode.
Okay.
And my fear is that they are going to run this series into the ground. It's been, what, 5 seasons so far?
I think it's either five or six.
Right. And there's not that many series that go on past 7 seasons and stay good.
Six.
Yeah. They need to parachute in some British people who understand how to end series.
And then
and
we'll
get
write
it done.
5 more episodes.
Right, let's go.
No,
guys,
they have the greatest series ever, because any day they realize it's coming to that point, they just have to say, oh, and I met my wife.
Yeah, but the longer it goes on, the greater the chance that it just becomes bad. Right?
Yeah.
I enjoy Smallville for some ungodly reason. But the longer it went on, you know, so this, they need to stop. Simpsons is the same. Even South Park, right? Scrubs turned into nonsense the longer it went on. Sometimes
like,
it should just
Scrubs,
stop.
Like, Scrubs had a thing where it was, like, it was really excellent for the first couple of seasons, and then it had this, like, major, like, it just kind of dropped, and then it finally picked up again, and the last, like, season or two were really excellent. I thought, but... You know,
I think what he's doing right now is he's blocking out the season that didn't have Zach Braff in it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
So that doesn't... I agree with you.
Season doesn't exist. I was just saying, like, I don't even, like, think of that show past, like, the actual, like, what I consider the series finale, when, like, the whole thing when he's like...
Oh, I love that episode. Yeah, like, seriously, every few months, I will watch that episode again.
It's really
It's like, what's the, like, it was like they, well, what it confuses me about that show is like they ended it and then they were like, oh no, wait, it's actually still going, but this time with different characters. What?
No, because the thing is that after, all right, the season that had the proper finale was season 8. Season 7 was a dip and they didn't think they were going to get to continue. And then ABC picked up the show from, I think it's NBC who originally had it. And
they
said, okay, this is going to be our final season and we're going to get our chance to wrap up everything and do this. It became a really successful season. And then ABC threw money at them and said, let's have one more. But most of the main actors said, we're not coming back.
Season 9 is when it was garbage.
Yeah, season 9, and that's how season 9 happened.
Yeah, because they were talking about, because I remember like NBC almost canceled it after season 7.
Mm-hmm.
And then ABC bought it and then did season 8 and gave it this like just absolutely incredible finale, which, you know, like today, like I still think that's one of the best like series finales, like, which, you know, with the, you know, like JD is watching that like kind of movie reel of like his future with like,
and that,
you know,
song by Peter Gabriel is playing.
Oh my god, it just like it breaks, it's just so emotional, and like, and you know, and like I can't listen to that song without thinking of that episode anymore, like. And it's like, and then they were like, well, we actually made really good ratings on this season, so let's do another one. And it's like, and then all, and then Zach Braff and Donald Faison and all of them were like, what?
No, like, no, Donald Faison was like, please can I continue to have my check?
At that point.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I'm just hoping someone speaks to those guys and they wrap up. Even if it's still popular, I'd like it to end before it turns
into garbage.
You
want it to end on a high.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't actually watch How I Met Your Mother, but I've heard a lot of good things, like, and they, like, a lot of people, like, kind of reflect what you're saying is, like, they needed to wrap this up before it, like, just turns into nonsense.
Yep.
So.
Okay, so, what I watched this week, let's just get the good movies out of the way. I rewatched Sex Drive, and that movie's fucking fantastic.
I do love that movie.
Really?
It's not a good movie.
I'm the party pooper on that
well,
movie.
Well, no, clearly it's not a good film, right? It has no real artistic merit insofar as it makes me laugh whenever I watch it.
Yeah, I guess. Like, when I watched it, like, I watched it last year with my roommates, and, like, there were some, I'll admit, there were some parts that I dug, but, like, most of it, like, I guess, like, that's, like, not really my, that to me is, like, the opposite of the kind of comedy I like. Like, I grew up with, like, Monty Python and Frasier and stuff like that.
I love those shows.
So, like, I guess, like, for me, like, I'm really picky when it comes to comedy. Like, I really am, and I'm not, and, like, I mean, like, my all-time favorite comedy movie is, like, a tie between Monty Python and the Holy Grail and A Fish Called Wanda.
Oh, man.
So that gives you kind of an indicator of where my comedy tastes lie. Like, I wish I could have liked Sex Drive, but continue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Personally, I still have on my to-watch list, I've seen Sex Drive, and
yeah,
I love that movie.
Yeah.
But on my to-watch list, I want to see the unrated version, because, have you heard about the unrated version?
It's ridiculous.
The director was mandated to make an unrated version of this movie, and because he thinks they're the shittiest thing you can do with any PG-13 movie, comedy...
Yeah.
What he did was he bought porn stars and had them run on in front of a green screen and then crop that in front of the movie in random scenes.
They did. It's like, that's like the funniest part about it is like randomly like this like naked chick like runs in front of the screen.
I need to get that.
And apparently there's this huge intro. I've seen the intro where you see Clark Duke and I think there's the other guy, the main guy,
sure,
who says, you know, this is the unrated version. And if you haven't seen the real version of this movie, please stop now and go and get the real version, because all you're going to get in this movie is more dicks, and you see like a real penis right there being pointed, and more boobs, and
yeah,
here you go.
And it's like this, like, guy, and like, and then they like, and then there's the whole thing where like, I forget the guy's name, but he's the one who like has sex with everybody. He's like, he has the glasses.
Clark Duke.
Like, the one who was in Hot Tub Time Machine?
Yeah, Clark Duke is his name.
Clark Duke, okay. And, like, there's a whole thing where he has, like, sex with, like, the 40-year-old woman or something like that in, like, the, you know, the redneck hillbilly town.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he's running through the field, and it keeps cutting to the shot of his dick, but it's not even, like, his dick. It's some, like, black porn star's dick. It's so ridiculous. And it's like the whole time he's like, oh my god, oh my god. And like, it just keeps like out of nowhere, like cutting to this shot of like this black dick like swinging around. It's like, what is this? Like, I don't even understand how something like this exists.
Like, I need to buy that movie.
What do you say? I've proven it to you. You need the underrated version.
Yeah.
It's like, I agree with like, that,
no,
that opening
I didn't.
where he's like, you know, unrated versions are pretty much like taking a big shit on artistic intent. And it just like has this like random, like you said, like this random naked woman and this random naked guy, and she's just like, he has a penis. Like, this is all you're gonna see this entire movie is just a bunch more tits and dicks. It's like,
oh,
what?
Good stuff.
Anyways, Douglas, you were talking about Sex Drive when this started.
Yes, I was. And that was the first good movie I watched this week. The second good movie I watched this week was The Baker, which is a 2007 British film with Michael Gambon is in it for a little bit. Now this guy who is the lead actor in this movie, I don't know him. I don't know his name. I don't know him from anything except a really, really horrible Stephen King film. And the only reason I watched this Stephen King movie was because Mr. O was in this movie. And it meant that, you know.
Oh, and for the uninitiated, Mr. O is in reference to Mr. Timothy Oliphant.
Yes.
He's in I Am Number 4. Are you going to watch that?
I'm not watching that movie. At least not in the theater.
For money.
I have to watch that movie. Mr. Oh, come on. Anyway, it was called Dreamcatcher, and he was...
Oh, shit.
So yes, okay, the lead actor in this film is the bearded one that got...
Okay.
Dream caught. Anyway, he's
dream caught. I'm gonna use that as a catchphrase now. Dungeon dream caught.
Funnily enough, I know someone who has a dream catcher and believes in all that rubbish.
You have no weird people, son.
So yes, okay. We've got Michael Gambon, we've got the Dream Caught Man, and we've got Simon Pegg's girlfriend from Shaun of the Dead.
So the show has spawned Mr. O, Ava Greencracks, and now the Dream Caught dude. Okay.
Yes.
I remember real fake stories.
Well, I was just going off of actors' names at this point, but okay, real fake stories. Anyways,
this movie, I thought it was pretty funny. It's really so it's about a hitman, and the Dream Caught Man is a hitman, and he.
So is it better than The Mechanic?
I would hope so.
Based off of Damien's detailed notes, I would believe that this movie is better. But the Dream Caught Man is a hitman who he decides he doesn't want to hit anymore. He doesn't want to kill anybody. So he's British, by the way. This is it's a British film. And he goes somewhere, I'm not sure exactly, but I think it's Wales. They sounded Welsh.
Apparently.
You know, despite the fact that they were speaking another language in England, which I think Wales is the only place that happens.
No, I think they speak another language in England. That's not English. Have you heard Stephen Gerrard? That's not English.
But okay, so yeah, he goes to this place in Wales and he decides to become a baker. He decides to start a cake shop, a bakery essentially. And for some reason, like, it makes no sense at all. For no reason at all, everybody in this hick town believes he's a hitman. Just because he looks like. He looks imposing, like, well, therefore he must be a hitman. Sorry?
What does a hitman look like?
Exactly, right? And so, based on this correct assumption that they have come to by absolutely horrible means, they all decide that they want him to kill somebody for them. Every single person in this town needs somebody dead, apparently. And
so it's like Jamaica.
Yeah, exactly, like Jamaica. And so, but they kind of just go up to him and say, "Hey, Mr. Baker Man, can you please kill this person for me?" So what happens is the first person that actually gets the balls to go up to him starts to say this, but then realizes, you know what? Maybe I should speak in code.
And be so, more subtle.
Exactly. So he says, "You know what? I want you to bake a chocolate cake." I don't understand how you're supposed to kill somebody from baking. I would think that maybe you think of even a red cake, like a red velvet cake, right? You know, at least there's
and
some
I want
sort
you to deliver it to that
significance
friend.
There, like some blood reference. But anyway, so he says, "I want you to bake a chocolate cake for this person," and that is code for
murder,
and it's his wife.
Does he hand him like a really thick wad of money in a paper bag at that time or something?
No, these people are not that smart. All right, so he wants his wife dead. And due to some fairly ridiculous happenstance, she dies within 2 days.
And so everybody feels that this man has killed this guy's wife. And all of a sudden, chocolate cake sales grow. They grow to
nice.
A ridiculous level.
I need to say this more.
Sounds good. Of course, he doesn't know what the hell is going on, you know? But anyway, I mean, that's really the stage is set for this movie right. from then on. And it's
and shenanigans.
Shenanigans, exactly. And it's pretty good. And I like, you know, the list can come out. Most of it, at least. A piece of
right.
it. I like the colors. Colors are nice.
It's that
not so much the music. The music, colors. okay. But now that we've got the good movies out of the way, I want to talk about another little movie that I watched. So, uh-oh. What's that?
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I watched a movie, and I'm not quite sure the name of this movie, but it has Dakota Fanning.
Oh, God.
Kristen Stewart.
Oh, The Runaways?
That one?
No. They are vampires in this movie.
Oh,
what?
Twilight.
New Moon, eh? The third one.
The third one, Eclipse.
Oh, that's your fault.
Okay.
So I saw
it's that
one.
Other one that they were in together.
Exactly, right?
Oh, I forgot they were in that movie together.
Well, I don't really count that as a movie. Okay, let's be honest. That's as porn for teenage girls, no? I should send that to the A&M.
I'm totally stealing that and putting it on Twitter. Yeah. Like, Twilight is porn for teenage girls.
Yeah,
so, yeah, I was very upset by this movie.
Why?
Because, alright. So, I saw the first movie and thought it was foolishness. Case closed, done. Whatever.
Shocking, terrible. Yeah.
I saw the second movie, and I suppose it was probably because of the situation that I was in, but that shit was the funniest movie ever.
Did you get my line? Did you get the line in the movie? The line?
Yeah, I got the line. I thought, like, I enjoyed watching the second movie so much for the worst reasons that I said, you know what, I have to watch this third movie.
Did you think that that could have lasted, Douglas?
Yes, I did.
How did you
I was
to that
so
conclusion?
Naive.
I was just saying, like, what actually kind of, like, indicated that that right. would actually happen again?
look, bad when stop, good has a threshold, right? You can get so good at no more.
Yeah.
Being horrible has none, Douglas.
I know.
Say, what up, let's
but I figured it would turn the corner just as
there's no
the
corner out there, Douglas.
And to tell you the truth, I'm not so sure that this movie didn't turn the corner. I feel that I just didn't watch it in the right conditions.
You didn't go to the theater.
Exactly.
All the women around you
right.
screaming at Taylor Lautner.
And drinking a lot of liquor.
Damn right. I mean,
but then
wow.
it's not the movie, Douglas. Douglas, you're not enjoying the movie, you're enjoying the situation.
Clearly. So
the
listen,
movie had
let's
nothing.
Let's just start this one up to bad decision.
The movie was just
okay.
served as a catalyst to laugh at Stephen
So Cohen. how many bottles did you have to drink when this movie was over?
Let's just say.
So that's why there's no liquor now. Wow.
Yeah. We don't have any beer to drink tonight. We're
there's
usually drinking this podcast. We're not drinking.
Yeah.
And I am.
I'm Douglas.
Seriously, Douglas, what the hell kind of logic is that? Like, the first one's bad. The second one's bad.
But funny.
I should go watch the third one.
And you know I'm...
Rule of threes.
You know I'm there for Breaking Dawn,
right?
I have to be there to laugh.
Sequels get
Dawn.
Better over time. Alright, Hollywood has proven that. Thanks, Douglas.
Anyways, you have anything else?
No. You know I'm corporate Douglas now. Three movies in 1 week, Andrew. That is not only three, actually technically four
because
we're
reviewing
watch.
A movie.
Yeah,
yeah.
Listen, that don't happen on a regular basis.
This week was actually a week of many films for me. Many, many films. And I'm going to lump a few together. I saw three documentaries this week. I'm going to start with the one I didn't like.
Ooh, I like the one that you like.
Okay.
But wow. I didn't watch all of it.
Okay. Of let's continue being vague while we wait for Andrew to get to whatever we just mentioned. Yeah. The one I didn't like, I watched it tonight, Redford Sent Us. We spoke about the trailer on this podcast. It's a documentary by, I think his name is Anthony Meadows. Stars Scott Hutchinson from...
Wait, stop.
Mm-hmm.
As in The Ladies' Man? No, that's Tim Meadows. Sorry. No, keep going.
Stars Scott Hutchinson. He writes for veryaware.com. I'm Very Aware on Twitter. He used to do We Are Movie Geeks. He was on this podcast a couple of years ago when he first went to Sundance. Him and Anthony Meadows decided to make this documentary about the experience of going to Sundance as a movie blogger in 2010. And they tried to enter it into Sundance. It didn't get in. And whatever, this week they decided to upload it to the internet for free. So if you're interested in watching it, go to redfordsentus.com and it's for free. You can stream it right there. However, I don't know. Maybe it falls into all the same problems that I had with Restrepo in that it didn't have any form of a theme to it. It was just really? About...
Can
it was.
You, can oh. you, yeah, can you wait, stop talking
I'm gonna, like, step out here real quick in Restrepo's defense.
Yeah.
Because I personally thought Restrepo was the best documentary of last year.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank
like,
you.
I really, like, I thought that film, like... And I understand, like, why... I kind of get what you're saying.
I don't. But never
like,
mind.
Let me finish. Let me think. Okay, so it's not really got much of a narrative, and it's not really got, like, a message to it, other than really just, like, you've never seen combat like this, and this is what war is like. And I think that was really kind of, like... The only thing, it's very, like, it's just observant. And, like, I think that's what... And these two guys that did this are photojournalists from National Geographic. And so I think naturally that's what they're going to kind of, like, lean towards in, like, in a, you know, as documentarians. And I have to say, like, it's a miracle the film even exists. But I mean, think about it. Like, because, like, it... These guys could have, like, you know, could have been killed while following, you know, these soldiers around, and they're like, you know, and the film would have been lost forever. But I think it's a really, really, truly riveting look at combat and, like, what it's like for these soldiers to be at this post that, you know, like, they, you know, like, they could die, or and some of them do die, like, at any moment, because this is such a, like, it's such a hellhole that they're stuck in. And, you know, like, and it was really kind of poignant when, like, one of the guys talked about, like, how, like, I can't sleep anymore, and, like, you know, and I've tried, like, five different sleeping pills and none of them work because I can't, you know, stop the nightmares. And, like, for me, like, I think, like, as like an emotional, like, a documentary reaching for, like, kind of some kind of truth to it, like, I know a lot of people, you know, Exit Through the Gift Shop was, like, the shit, and I really enjoyed that movie a lot, but I have to say, like, as far as, like, a movie, as a documentary that was reaching for some kind of, like, emotional and intellectual truth, I have to say that, like, Restrepo really, like, is head and shoulders above anything that was out last year, like, in terms of documentaries.
Kevin, so, I understand you completely.
Yeah.
I have no qualms about letting people love that movie for all of those reasons. However, I hate it for all of those reasons.
Really?
I just have one.
We did a review on this movie.
I have one thing to say about this movie, just quickly. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make sure that everybody knows my stance.
Because you're important.
Yeah, I'm important. My stance is that Youth in Revolt is better.
Okay, and before we allow people to respond to that statement, I'll just continue with Redford Sent Us. The problem I have with this movie is that it instead of actually having, like, Restrepo a narrative or anything...
Can you stop calling Restrepo's name, please?
A narrative or anything. It's all about showing this experience and the way that it's intercut throughout the film.
Are we back on Restrepo?
No, I'm talking about Redford Sent Us. I'm talking about Red Foot Sentence.
Okay, sorry.
The way that it's intercuts all of the days as Scott goes through the festival, it doesn't feel like you really get into the experience that much, and it doesn't really inform you anything other than he spent a lot of days writing reviews and watching movies, and then and maybe it might be that I'm disillusioned about the experience of Sundance, because to this date I still haven't attended any of these festivals, and I mean I want to, but I haven't yet, so it I just didn't like it that much.
That's the trials of watching movies.
Like, I'm sorry to keep interjecting here. I myself have been like doing coverage for South by Southwest, Austin Film Festival, Fantastic Fest, and Butnumathon for like a couple of years now because I live in Austin. So like I'm fortunate enough to be in, I mean, like I've never been to Sundance or Venice or Toronto or anything like that, but I am fortunate enough to live in Austin, Texas, which is a very like very film friendly. I'm not sure what the word would be for, but you get what I mean.
It's a better like place than Jamaica.
Huh?
It's a better place than Jamaica, according to Damien.
Well, I mean, like, I don't know. I have no comment on that. So, but I guess, like, for me, like, I haven't seen this movie that you're speaking about, but I can see why, like, it would be something of, like, a really incredible experience for somebody to do that for the first time, you know, and like and talk about it, because like, you know, like, is that the idea, is that like this is his first time doing this?
Actually, this is his second time going to Sundance, but he talks with people like Chase Whale and Rusty Gordon from Gordon and the
Whale.
Those
are friends of mine, like I know them, like from Gordon and the Whale.
You see all of these people in there, but I feel like a lot of the interviews are cut really short, and then they intercut it with interviews they're doing with film stars throughout the festival, and you never really get anything other than little moments which never really add up to enough of an emotional attachment throughout the film.
Yeah, I think, like, for me, like, if you haven't been to a festival, because it, like, the first time going, you're just like, you're so like, I remember the first time I went to Austin Film Festival, which, like, I mean, like, all four of the ones I mentioned are all Austin centric, and, you know, I love them all dearly. You know, I love going to Butnumathon and talk, you know, just like sitting in the Alamo Drafthouse, you know, with Harry Knowles, you know, like, and or like, or Fantastic Fest with, you know, like the same kind of situation, whether it's like over a few days, or South by Southwest, which is like a big cultural festival. But like, Austin Film Festival is really kind of my favorite because it's the most like kind of like chill. It's like our equivalent of Sundance, except we get a lot more like Oscar players.
Okay.
Like when that happens, because it happens in late October. Makes so we sense. Get all the stuff that's going to, we get a lot of the stuff that's going to come out in like November and December. And I have to say, like, when you first go to something like that, or even the second time, like it's a really, it's kind of like an overwhelmingly joyous experience as someone who loves film. Like, even if you're not like writing reviews or anything like that, if you're just there to watch movies, like it's really cool. And like, and you're just kind of like, you're overwhelmed by the amount of like screenings and conferences and panels and Q&As. And, you know, like there's like, I mean, like last year we had, you know, Robert Rodriguez came into town, and he was receiving an award from the Austin Film Society, and he presented like a special screening of Sin City, you know, which, you know, like everybody loves, and, you know, it was filmed in Austin, Texas, and everything. So it's like, it's one of those things where, like, I guess, like, I think what you're saying is valid, that like it probably doesn't add up. I mean, like, I haven't seen the film, so I can't really say anything, but I will say, like, in the guy's defense, like, I can see why he did it.
No. Because, like, I'm not saying that he shouldn't have done it or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I just, yeah, I just didn't,
it just
didn't,
it just comes down to, like, he was so, like, into this experience that he wanted to kind of tell his story. And it's probably one of those things where, like, it resulted in a, you had to have been there kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it feels like it's not a very, like, to me, what you've been saying about it, like, it sounds like it just ultimately, like, the film itself isn't very cinematic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's nothing really interesting about this. It's like you can only really like relate to what he's saying, like if you've done that.
Yeah.
And I think like it's also like that does sound like kind of like more like a fluff piece, like that somebody would put like, you know, like on a late night news segment, because like it sounds like they probably should have like had like more lengthy interviews where people would actually like say like is that the kind of the issue, like they wouldn't say like any insightful things before really being like cut away to something else.
Yeah, and I mean, at this point, I think what I'd really be more interested in is to have you watch the film as someone who's attended festivals and gone through that kind of experience to see what you thought of it.
I'd like to check it out. What's it called again?
Redford sent us. You can watch it online at that website, redfordsentus.com.
Yeah, I'll check it out and I'll let you know what I think.
Also, this week I saw Gasland, the documentary about the energy corporations' corruption and why can't I remember the word right now? Screwing up of the environment by digging for natural gas. And I mean, we all know where this is going, because if it wasn't going in that direction, the documentary wouldn't have been made. These guys found ways to circumvent the law to therefore be unmonitored and allowed to do whatever the hell they want, and they've fucked up the environment.
Yeah.
It was nominated for the Best Documentary Award at the Oscars. It didn't win, and I agree that it shouldn't have won. It's a good movie, and it informs people on things that if you have no idea about, it definitely clues you in on, especially from the perspective of the guy who's filming it as a person who is in tune with nature and has this huge property, who had the opportunity to lease his land to these people to have them drill and eventually ruin his property, that he didn't eventually do. It started out as him researching as to whether he should do it, and then became this huge documentary. And he takes you throughout the country, and it's a really interesting look at that topic. Anything about it?
I was going to say, I saw the same film, and I pretty much agree with what you're saying. Like, it's kind of like terrifying in a lot of ways, because I mean these people can light their tap water on fire. Like, you know, like that's pretty scary.
Yep.
You know, and like I don't mean to spoil this for any, but I didn't mean to spoil that for anybody who hasn't seen it, but I mean I'd seen the trailer, so I don't think it's a spoiler.
Not much.
But yeah, it's just like, it's really good. I agree with you. It's not like a well-rounded enough, like, it's a good, not great kind of thing that like verges on greatness, but it almost like it gets into like activism a little bit too much, kind of like how Waiting for Superman. Like, I had a problem with that
movie. Haven't gotten around to that one. I want to watch that one.
I liked it. And it really, like, it inspired me and everything to, like, kind of, like, stand against, like, the crappy, you know, education system in the U.S. Because, like, I mean, like, speaking as somebody who lives in the U.S., our education system, like, blows. Like, I'm really ashamed of it, especially in a state like Texas where it's even, like, worse than you could, like, imagine. It's, like, the fact that we're behind, like, given, like, our resources, like, it's just shameful that we're behind, like, countries that don't have any resources. It's shameful. But I feel like, back to Waiting for Superman, like I agree with a lot of what you're saying. Like it's a really informative documentary. It's a little bit more like activism than something like The Cove, which was from 2009. I don't know if y'all have seen that one. It's about dolphins in Japan being slaughtered.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and that's probably my favorite documentary of like the last like 20 years or something. I mean, just because of just like how well done and how like it's just like I mean what did you think of The Cove?
I thought it was a really well done documentary. I was worrying throughout the whole first half of it as to whether it would get to the point as to why they shouldn't be eating dolphins, and they finally raised that point, and from then on I was totally with the movie.
Wait,
yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to eat dolphins?
No, you're not. That or whales.
But they taste good.
Because the dolphins have mercury in their bodies, and that actually like will slowly poison you over time. And the thing is that there was like a crisis. They explained this in the film. Like that there was a crisis in Japan of like this like large like this whole like generation of children born with like birth defects and mental disabilities and everything because of the mercury poisoning that was kind of like slowly infecting the mothers. That's and the parents.
They didn't get enough paprika on it.
Yeah, and the thing is like they're selling this dolphin meat as if it were whale meat because like whale meat's like acceptable, but like dolphin meat, like they don't know that it's dolphin meat and they don't consider dolphin food. So it's like not only is it like wrong for them to be like slaughtering these dolphins, but they're also like harming the people of Japan. So
and yeah. Doing it really underhandedly at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like they're not even. It's not even like. They're, like, none of those people are aware. But, yeah, no, like, I was just... I'm sorry to keep interrupting you. Like I said, like, the Waste... Gasland, not Wasteland. There were two land movies in the documentary nominees, and I always get confused. No, Gasland, I agree. Definitely really, really informative documentary. You should check it out.
And to round out the documentaries I watched this week, I watched Inside Job, the film that actually won Best Documentary at the Oscars this year.
What do you think of that one?
And
I Matt Damon in it.
That's where we're going to take it, Douglas.
Yeah.
Yes, Matt Damon did narrate the film. It was a really amazing documentary. Everyone knows that the markets crashed, and everyone knows...
No one knows that more than I do.
And everyone knows, everyone has a general, most people at least, we hope, has a general idea as to a few key people that the fingers have been pointed to as to why the markets crashed. But this film goes into a really detailed, from all the way back in history, as to why certain laws being generated and who helped generate those laws, to now as to who circumvented those laws and created new ones to allow for... how the markets crashed and why it's totally Iceland's fault and why unless we do something now it's not gonna get any better even though people are still talking about how we're getting out of the recession.
Isn't that why
they extradited Dudus? Totally. That's totally why we extradited Dudus. And in that sense it's a really great documentary. The only issue I have with it, and it's really not a negative, it's just a caution for anyone walking into this film thinking that, like some documentaries, it'll be a little bit easy. You really have to focus while you're watching this film. Because even though there are a lot of interviews which basically tell you what's going on, and Matt Damon helps to narrate as we're going on, you have all these documents being graphicked on the screen and going really quickly and highlighting certain pieces, and you really have to keep focus as if you're like in an econ lecture room kind of focused. Yeah. And I was into it. It was a really good documentary, and I agree with it winning the Best Documentary Award. As much as Exit Through the Gift Shop entertained me more, this film. What would you have picked for Best Documentary of the Year, Damien?
Restrepo.
Well, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have gone to that well.
Inside Job was
Catfish,
good.
Catfish is so much better.
Please stop talking. Inside Job
Catfish,
was good.
Catfish, what?
But WBEZ.
Wait,
Chicago,
see, the thing about Catfish is Catfish was good, and Restrepo was not.
Right.
So anytime you
have
a
good stop, Douglas.
Right.
We already know that's what you think.
Yeah. So the people from This American Life did a better job explaining the crash of the economy than Inside Job. And that is a radio talk program.
Are you talking about the Toxie episode?
The Toxie? No. Not
I know.
The Toxie episode. They had one devoted where they and the guys from their money podcast, they did one about Magnetar and their involvement in destroying the US economy. And they did, I think, a more entertaining job than this documentary. The documentary was good, but it wasn't anywhere as good as Restrepo.
Okay, so. I'll leave it there.
Yeah. What else did you see?
One a movie I want to mention, and I don't know what you guys think about this movie, because I know Douglas hasn't really watched it other than what he saw me watching, and I don't know if you've seen it. Strictly Ballroom. Baz Luhrmann's first film.
That movie's fantastic.
I'm gonna restrain. I'm gonna bow out of the Baz Luhrmann discussion because I have a lot of strong feelings about him.
It's a dance movie in which it basically, like, if I want to explain it really quickly, it really reminds me of, it's if you merged one of the craziest musicals you could think of with
the Baz Luhrmann
with a Terry Gilliam film with Dirty Dancing.
I wish you people could see the scowl that is being generated on David's face right now. It's just slowly, his lips are slowly curling, and you can see the muscles in his hand.
And it's an Australian film. And it's an Australian film.
Like he's Ted Gilliam, and I tried to not scowl anymore.
And then you heard Dirty Dancing. The movie is really, really good. It's really silly, whimsical, and it's fantastic. I loved it. And I loved how much you could see the Gilliam influence in that, in Luhrmann's style. You don't see that much towards the end when you see Australia, but at the beginning, it just, it's kind of special.
Yeah, I don't think I've
Yeah, I definitely don't think it's Damon's kind of movie. No, and one more movie I want to mention, because I'm sure we've all seen it at this point, and it's fantastic, it's great, it's Billy Wilder's Ace in the Hole.
Oh.
I finally saw it with Kirk Douglas. Great movie. I wrote a review. I sent it into Anomalous Material. You can read it there.
Welcome to the Gino.
They read me writing about Tyler Perry poorly and they fired me.
Okay. Fair.
Because I can't tell Jamaicans that they're wrong. Anyways, that's what I've been watching this week. This week in trailers, one of the trailers that came out this week was a new trailer for the new Russell Brand movie, Arthur.
Wow. What is this for?
Continuing on, this is Grand Central.
Oh.
Sorry.
There's this girl. I think she's inspiring him.
We seem to have a lot of fun.
It's my calling.
He's getting married.
Get on the horse.
No, it's okay.
Maybe Daddy could help?
Let me
help. But you're not qualified.
Please.
That was no trouble.
You can't live without the money.
I get a job.
Get a job.
I am a grown man.
Don't let that undermine what I just said.
The remake of, I don't know what year it came out, British movie, Arthur.
It's not a British movie.
I thought it was British.
It has a British man in it, but he was an American star. Dudley Moore?
Okay, it's an American movie, Arthur.
Pretty sure it's an American movie. I may be wrong. I may easily be wrong.
You're probably wrong.
But he did a lot of American
films. I have to say, I am guessing at this point.
Yeah.
I don't know who to bet on, whether me or
Douglas.
And
I have seen the original movie.
Was it set in America or
It's set in America. It's essentially, it's the same thing.
Okay, so it's probably an American movie.
Yeah.
Kevin, what did you think of this trailer?
Bette Midler is in that movie, not Bette Midler.
I don't know, like, it's not really doing anything for me. Like, I don't really, like, Russell Brand, I think the only thing I've liked him in was Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and I guess in Get Him to the Greek, so I'm just kind of like, eh. It's like, could be good, could be bad, I don't know. I don't really have any strong opinions about Russell Brand or anything that he's in, really, like, eh. Sorry.
I really liked him in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and even though I hated Get Him to the Greek, his continuation of that character, I still kind of enjoyed it in moments of that film. And this movie, I think what really ruins this trailer for me is Jennifer Garner. If I had to pick one element, like, I don't think I've really liked anything she's been in much at all.
What has she been in that was, like, genuinely good, though?
I liked her in Juno. That was... I didn't really
Juno
like
was
her.
A pretty good
I liked
movie.
Juno. Sorry. I didn't really like her in that movie.
So Juno
like
was Electro. Good. The Invention of Lying was good.
Oh, shit. The Invention of Lying. I love that movie.
I have never seen it, so...
Catch Me If You Can was good.
Was she in that movie?
Okay, yeah. Was she?
Yeah.
Did not know that.
She was the whore.
She must have been in for like 5 seconds or something.
That doesn't count then. Anyways.
That's an excellent movie, though.
I love Catch Me If You Can. Arthur... I'm moderately looking forward to it. It's
actually kind of like 13 going on 30. Is that crazy?
Yes. I don't think I've ever... I've seen from that is the Thriller clip where they all dance a Thriller. I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen the whole movie either.
I really like Greta Gerwig, and she's in this movie, and I'm waiting for...
Is she the one in the Greenberg?
Yeah, yes. She's in Greenberg.
I hated that movie,
but I loved her.
I hate that. Really? Rectal.
And
she's in some great stuff, though. Like some really serious and good stuff. She's in Baghead, which is fantastic.
She's in House of the Devil, which is good.
Oh, yeah, she is. You're right. Yes. And she's also in what I was going to say was Hannah Takes the Stairs, which is another really good.
I haven't seen that.
She's in a bunch of, like, mumblecore. Like,
She came out of that, and now she's trying to break out. She was in No Strings Attached earlier this year, and even though I hated that movie, the couple moments she had were okay.
Biased. Yeah.
Probably. Douglas, what did you think of this trailer?
Arthur.
Okay.
So, as I said, I've seen the original. I like Dudley Moore. Dudley Moore is awesome. Russell Brand, I do not like. I did not like him in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. I like that movie despite him. I actually didn't really like him much in Getting to the Greek, which is maybe the only other big movie that I've seen him in.
Well, is it because you don't like his performance or that you hate the character that he's doing?
No, I just didn't think, like, for example, in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, I didn't think any of his jokes were really laugh-out-loud funny. Yes, there were some moments where, okay, it was all right, but it was never as... I'm not going to say he was bad. I did imply that or say that, but I shouldn't. I just think, especially in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, he was nowhere near... as good as people made him out to be. For some reason,
I definitely would agree with you. I think Jason Segel was definitely like the thing about that movie.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, like,
that's Mila Kunis.
Brilliant.
On the other hand, I actually would go to the other extreme now in Getting to the Greek and say I really did not like him in that movie. Strangely enough, I look at the trailer and there are a couple moments where I say, yeah, that could work. But overall, I don't think this trailer warrants my attention. I don't think that I'm going to watch this movie. If I do, it will be under duress.
somebody dragged you to the theater and chained you to the seat.
Yes.
I'm totally going to drag you to watch this
actually
movie.
Funnily enough, that happened to me with Pirates of the Caribbean. I was dragged there under duress and then I loved the shit out of it.
Okay, I was going to say, like, I hope you didn't hate it.
Oh, I loved it. Loved it to death. But I didn't think it was going to be good at all.
With the first one?
Hitman on Tourist.
So you're not talking to me anymore.
Anyway,
and let's not forget Max Payne. Let's not forget Max Payne, right?
No,
Max
Payne, not Hitman. Max Payne.
I didn't think.
Yeah, because Hitman wasn't horrible. I kind of, no. I didn't mind.
No, he's pointing at me as to the movies that I've made him watch.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, Damien, what did you think of the shit
bad
trailer?
Moving on.
Next trailer that came out this week that I want to talk about is Meek's Cut Off.
We follow land downhill.
We need water. That much I know.
That's what you think, that we're lost?
I'd say that seems about the right word for it.
We're not lost, we're just finding our way.
I don't blame him for not knowing. I blame him for saying he did.
We made our decision. This is only a bad dream soon. It's going to be a story to tell.
Damien, what do you think of this trail?
Hey, guys. I don't know if you know this, but I like westerns.
That's why I went straight to you.
I don't know if I've told you this before. I'm a sucker for westerns. I can't help myself. It looks interesting. They're racist as all hell, which is good.
That's all the rest of them.
I've seen I've seen some westerns. I'm trying to remember the name of one that they tried to be more PC, and it just is.
Which was Jose? Which was that?
I'm trying to remember the name. No, it's not any big one.
Is the recent one or
Blazing Saddles? Maybe
no.
Jose, it wouldn't have been True Grit.
No,
I mean,
no, like towards the when I.
Skip,
when I
move on.
Yeah,
move on.
But they tried and it was it just felt weak, like the But this looks like a western, and there's a lot of gravel in throats, which is always a plus.
If, mumble. Yeah, you totally
Jeff
said something.
Bridges could do the narration and me.
I think that should
and
be Jeff Bridges'
extra point.
I think that should be Jeff Bridges' next career point. Yeah. Just be, have
I
some
think,
involvement
I think Jeff
in every
should,
western.
Should take right. Morgan Freeman for that one.
You should just narrate western. I want to see this movie a lot, but I'm a sucker for westerns.
Okay, I'll go next. This trailer looks awesome. continue.
Do you guys any of you guys know about that classic video game Oregon Trail?
Yes. Is this it?
For some reason, it reminds me of
that
scene.
Hold on. Stop. Before you say you make jokes about this, I saw articles about them seriously considering making that into a movie.
I don't know anything
could
about
this actually
that.
Be
this
that
is not that. This is not that. But I don't know, just seeing the wagon and them going, we have to go there, and the other guy's going, maybe the water's over there, and they find a guy who, like, summary, I personally haven't played Argon's Trail, but how they describe Argon's Trail is that this movie looks like it to be.
This movie's dope again.
You're not far off. You're not far off.
However, at the same time, I really want to see this movie. I mean, Damien knows I'm a converted westernite.
Now that you've got that caveat out of the way.
It took you long enough.
And for some reason I just see dirt and people running around in it and I go, yay.
The Red Dead Redemption,
which I still haven't beaten. I need to finish that game. I haven't touched it for like a week
because
you got in work because you started work. They're corporate.
I need to play it again. I love that
you
game.
Have the weekend, Douglas.
What weekend? The weekend when I teach
guys,
on Saturday or
guys,
the weekend when I teach on Sunday?
How about we talk about movies?
Kevin, I think you've seen this movie, am I right?
Yes.
You son of...
Yeah. I know, like, y'all are all jealous all of a sudden.
First question, because
sure.
The trailer does this, I have to ask, is it presented in 4:3?
Yeah, it's in Academy ratio.
Wow, that's interesting.
No. Let me... Hold on. Okay, so I saw this movie back at Austin Film Festival, which, you know, like, the thing's not coming out till what, like, April in the U.S. here? And,
don't
like,
worry, we'll get it on DVD in September.
Yeah, and I saw this movie way back in October. It feels like an eternity ago that I saw this movie. It just that kind of gives you an idea of how busy my year's been. I thought this movie was extraordinary. It is in Academy ratio, and I know that sounds really weird for a Western, but it's like one of the most like exactly framed, like the precision in the framing of the cinematography in this is just astonishing. Like it's the fact that they were able to pull off that ratio while having all these like wide vistas and everything like that is like, it's comparable, you know, like stuff like, you know, like the, you know, like just the cinematography is like on the level of like Roger Deakins' work in, you know, like in No Country for Old Men and True Grit recently, or also like, you know, like in his own work in Assassination of Jesse James, you know, three westerns he's done, but just without the widescreen aspect, it's in Academy ratio. The film itself, it's very, very quiet. Like, have you all seen Wendy and Lucy?
I have.
What did you think of that?
It tried to do what Winter's Bone did and failed.
Okay.
I kind of agree with you. I thought it was a really good movie, but just didn't entertain.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree. I think Michelle Williams was really great in that movie, but like it's kind of boring.
Yeah,
it's pretty boring. Like, and I like the Winter's Bone comparison because that was in my top 10 last year. But no, like, and it's the same director basically. And so, like, it's a lot of long stretches of silence where, like, the only sound we're getting in Meek's cutoff is just, like, you know, these wagons going...
Argon's trail.
You know, so it's like, it's a lot of long pauses. But I thought it was a pretty extraordinary film because it's got that Western, like... I'm trying to pull up my review here to see exactly what I said. It's basically, like, it's got a lot of, like, those Western trappings within, like, this kind of indie sensibilities. And that sounds weird, but it's actually like that. It's actually almost like a match made in heaven. And it's like, and I do like that you said Oregon Trail, the movie, because that's basically what it is. Like, I'm not even going to like dance around the bush with that one. Like, it really is Oregon Trail, the movie. And if anybody's ever played that, like, they know exactly what I'm talking about. It's like, you have found water. You have contracted cholera, you know, like, or you or your person in your group has typhoid, you know, like it's a lot like that. And basically, like, what happens is, like, they're trying to get through this area, and this guy played by Bruce Greenwood, I don't, like, y'all know who that is?
Which one is Bruce Greenwood? I can't picture a face right now.
He in the recent Star Trek movie, he played Captain Pike.
Okay. Yeah.
He's been in a lot of stuff. Like, he's a really famous character actor. So he plays the bearded guy in the trailer.
That's who that is.
Is that who that is?
Yeah. It's weird, like, because even when I saw it, like, I knew who it was, but I didn't recognize his voice or his face, obviously, because he's behind this, like, massive beard and everything. So it's like he's unrecognizable, but he's fantastic in it. And so basically, like, he's leading this, like, three families through this, like, you know, cutoff, you know, what's called, and he is the titular character, like, he's Stephen Meek, so it's called, like, Meek's cutoff, because it's his, like, shortcut, basically, to like, the, you know, California or whatever, and then they basically, like, it's just, like, it's a kind of just a survival tale, like, they're just kind of wandering, and, you know, it's really sparse and sprawling, and very quiet, and the guy who... And Michelle Williams, she's, you know, phenomenal. Like, everybody raved about her in Blue Valentine, which I also saw at Austin Film Fest, and I thought she was fantastic in that, but I actually preferred her in this movie. But, you know, this movie wasn't eligible for the Oscars because it's a 2011 release in the U.S. So I don't know if it's been released, like, in the U.K. or anything beforehand, but anyways, but it's a 2011 release, so it wasn't a bit eligible, so it's not like she would have been nominated anyways. But no, like, I just thought it was a really fantastic movie. It really, like, it's very sparse and sprawling, and it's a really kind of, like, interesting study on, like, survival and, like, and basically, so, like, they're wandering, and then they come across this Native American, and they capture him, and, like, there's this debate on whether or not they're gonna, like, kill him or let him guide them or whatever, and, like, so they decide to let him guide them, and of course, you know, like, Stephen Meek is against that because he, like, fought in the Civil War or something. It's kind of vague as to, like, how he knows the Indians, but he knows they're, like, savages, basically, like, or he assumes they all are. And so the whole thing is just about, like, them, like, the whole second half of the movie is them following him. And I don't want to tell you what happens, but it kind of has, like, an ending akin to No Country for Old Men. It's kind of like a non-ending that kind of makes you sit there and think for a little while. You're like, huh, interesting.
I need to revisit No Country for Old Men. Haven't seen that in a long while.
Yeah. But, and it was interesting watching this trailer because it, you know, it's only just now coming out because the movie is only just coming out in this April. And for you guys, what, like, September?
We'll get it on DVD.
Yeah. We'll get it with
DVD. Jesus. Like, I just feel bad for y'all because y'all have to wait for these releases forever.
Thanks. That helps.
It keeps us warm at night. You know, your what's the word? Empathy?
Yeah.
Keeps us
warm. But,
sit here and movie darkness.
Anyway, so yeah, it was interesting. Like, that's a really rare experience for me to see something and then see a trailer for it afterwards. But, so yeah, definitely, I would highly recommend this movie. Like, it's very, it's not, like, entertaining. It's more, like, thought-provoking, but if you're up for something kind of different, you know, that's going to be, you know, like I said, Western with indie, you know, kind of like quiet indie sensibilities, like, it's really something else. So yeah, check it out when you can. I like I said, I feel bad that it's going to be so long before y'all finally get to do it. Like, we should regroup in September when y'all finally see it. And then we can I can ask y'all how y'all thought about it, and we can discuss it then.
And you can tell us how you thought about Redford sent us at that point.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it'll be a perfect, you know, reconnection.
We'll bring it all full circle.
Yeah. But anyways.
So I think that, like I said, overall the trailer, I think really kind of captures a lot of the movie. It has actual music from the movie, so it's very kind of like twangy, like There Will Be Blood kind of music. Even though it's not as like omnipresent as something like that. I will say, like, I was surprised at how much dialogue they packed into that 2-minute trailer. Because that's pretty much the extent of all the dialogue in the entire movie. Like, they pretty much put, like, every line of dialogue in the movie into the I mean, like, I'm exaggerating, but you get my point.
Yeah.
It's very... It's not a lot of talking in this movie. It's a lot of wandering. And it's interesting because, like, one last thing I will say, like, one of the interesting things they do play with, like, somebody brought up racism. They actually play with... They kind of look into, like, sexism in the whole thing about how, like, the men will often, like, go off into a corner somewhere, like, away from the main camp and talk amongst themselves about strategy. And a lot of the movies told from the women's perspective, especially Michelle Williams. And it's a lot of these conversations you're kind of hearing as if, and the camera usually stays on the women and often their side, you know, like, kind of listening and kind of eavesdropping, like, of what they can hear. And you can only hear as much as they can hear, so you're kind of hearing this kind of muted, off in the distance sound of this conversation, which, you know, like, that's not, you know, like, that's pretty true to the era. Like, that was kind of what was going on. Like, women were not, like, respected enough to be in the conversation. So it's interesting, like, the kind of, like, ideas and things they're examining and with a very observant hand. So, yeah. So check it out when you get the chance.
And then Matthew Ross came along.
It was indeed a better time. silence.
And with that, we can move on.
There we go. Woo!
I wanted us all to sit down and watch Gaspar Noé's Irreversible, starring Vincent Cassel and Monica Bellucci.
You channeled your inner Douglas.
I know, because Douglas already selected his film for next week, which is not a French film.
Surprising.
And I just decided to select a French film.
Yes.
I do have to, in defense of my selection, say that it still is not in English. It
okay, so still we're still getting very Douglasy. But anyways, talking about the movie for this week, Irreversible, the film by Gaspar Noé. If you don't know already, it's a revenge plot. I know, I'm rebooting myself all the time. It's a revenge plot in which Vincent Cassel's girlfriend gets raped, and he goes to enact revenge against the guy who did it. However, the entire story is told in reverse. So you start out with Vincent Cassel going to this club called The Rectum to go and get revenge on this guy.
Sorry, like, the name of that club always cracks me up. The Rectum.
Can I tell you, by the way, that when I was first watching this movie, because when it starts, you're inside a room and some guy's just chatting foolishness, And this guy is like, oh, why is it so loud? And he says, yes, it is
those fags,
the gays in the rectum. And I thought that he actually meant that he had two neighbors that were gay that were having sex, and then they pulled out to the club, and I was like, oh, that's the name of the club. Okay.
I've actually written a review for this on the site. I watched it because it's on the list of 1001 films that you should watch before you die, which I've decided I want to go through and see all of. And I saw it this weekend and decided we should all watch it, because I don't know if you guys had seen this before. Damien, had you seen this film before? Yes, you had. Whoa, I was hoping to have, like, surprised you for some reason. I kind of want to hear what you guys have to say, but Kevin, you first. You hadn't seen this film before.
No. I had actually, like, the only familiarity I had with Gaspar Noé was Enter the Void, which I saw last year. When it returned to, I didn't see it in its initial run at South by Southwest, but I saw it when it came back to the Alamo Drafthouse. Like, just to real quick, like, in case anybody doesn't know what the Alamo Drafthouse is, do y'all know what it is?
Yeah, I've heard rumors and murmurings that it's awesome theater.
It's a thing we have here in Austin, where you go to the theater, and unlike most movie theaters where you sit down and you watch this kind of crappy pre-show of, you know, like, they're just advertising, you know, bullshit, you know, like they're just advertising crap, you know, like, and they basically, like, the pre-show shows, like, clips and stuff, like a reel of clips that's, like, related to the movie you're about to see. And so, like I remember, like, the best example I could come up with is, like, back a few years ago when I saw Transformers at the midnight show with my roommate. They showed, like, a reel of, like, Transformers cartoons and toy commercials and stuff like
I'd
that.
I'd like to cut in right there. And
sure.
You remember around an hour ago, Damon was talking about his horrible experience watching The Mechanic.
Yeah.
Why are you going to tell us about this amazing theater, which we can't go to?
I just wanted, like, okay. So,
after you know what we have to put up with on a weekly basis.
Bottom line is that this theater, they serve
the food
and alcohol with the movie. Beer. So you can order like a meal and have like beer or wine or a margarita, you know, whatever. Know. And that's kind of the whole idea. And I'm sorry to kind of be bragging here. Like, I don't mean to.
How much is a ticket to Texas Snow?
A ticket to Texas, the state?
Yes. You need a ticket to get here, right?
From Jamaica, probably a lot of money.
Dude, is America harsh on, you know, illegal immigrants? Like, I don't want to go through all of that trouble to get
to get to Mexico.
I don't know.
Walking from Mexico.
Yeah, anyway, say, apparently Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, it's like we asked Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, where are you on energy? 21st century. Where are you on the economy? 21st century. Where are you? We ask him about immigration. He's a little old school. I will build a wall. And even the Chinese are going, that will not work.
Anyways, you were talking about the wonderful Alamo Draft House.
No, sorry, I got off track there.
The Draft House. So we saw Enter the Void when it came back. They re-released it. Which, I don't know, I know, Andrew, you've seen, like, the first hour of that.
Yeah, I haven't gone back to finish it. I have to admit, it looks
like 3 hours long,
but something stopped me watching it, and I just haven't gone back.
It's like 3 hours long, so I understand. But anyways, that movie did end up on my top 10 last year. I've been, like, dropping names like a douche, like, this whole show. And that film is basically about, like, this guy who is, like, kind of like a low-level drug supplier, dealer, whatever, in Tokyo. He's an American, and he goes to this deal, and this guy, like, that you presume is his friend, betrays him and gives him up to the Japanese cops, and then he runs into the bathroom and is trying to, like, get rid of his stuff. And then they keep banging on the door, and he won't answer, and so basically they shoot him in the stall. And then that's, like, the first 30 minutes of the movie. And then the whole rest of it is, like, his spirit, like, going into the afterlife and seeing all the after effects of his death and how it affects his sister, who is, like, now, like, who has come to Japan to, like, live with him, but is, like, a stripper. And she's had this, like, And it's just like this very big, like weird existential, like it's like watching the whole like third act of 2001 A Space Odyssey for 3 hours. Like if you watch the whole Jupiter and Beyond segment when he goes into the wormhole.
I know exactly
in space.
What you're talking about. Let's not talk about 2001 A Space Odyssey. I have bad feelings about that movie.
The point being is like, so it's a really trippy movie, and like the whole thing, and like it basically follows like the Tibetan Book of the Dead, where the idea is like his you see all your life and every like you die, and then you see all of your life flash before your eyes, and then you see like the after effects of your death, and then finally you're reincarnated somehow, and like that's kind of like basically like this weird like it's like, you know, very like all these overhead like crazy Gaspar Noé twirly twisty, you know, whatever shots, like kind of a lot of overhead of the like architecture, so you're very rarely like up close with anybody, but yeah, so anyways, that film. So Irreversible, now I'm sorry to get off track there. Irreversible, I knew this was a Gaspar Noé film because one of my colleagues, Chris Tapley, like had it, like was one of his favorite movies. And I was intrigued to see it. I was a little scared, I'm not going to lie, because I had heard things.
Yes, there's an infamous rape scene in this movie.
Yes, the rape scene. Like, we'll just cut to the chase there. The rape scene. This was a movie, like, that I think is extremely well made. I think Gaspar Noé is an incredibly talented director. I think it's a very good idea film, because it really kind of looks at a lot of various different things and ideas about like life and philosophy and death, and like how to steal a line from your review, Andrew, how like one event can like completely alter the course of someone's life, you know, cause like basically after this rape changes this whole thing, and then so like Vincent Cassel, like her boyfriend and her ex-boyfriend. Yeah, like
her ex-husband.
Ex-husband.
Yes. Yeah. I swear it was boyfriend.
No, they actually
I thought it was just a boyfriend or something. Anyways, I don't know. So they basically go off going for revenge, and that of course like they're not gonna, you know, get away with it cleanly, because they don't want to make it a clean getaway kind of revenge. They want to go and kill this guy, you know, like Sin City style. I don't think I'll ever watch this movie again, to say the least, because that rape scene, like I feel like that was the one problem I had with the film. Not that it was like a critical flaw, just that like I felt like I understand why Noé decided to like basically have the whole scene, like the whole rape on camera. It's really incredibly hard to watch. I feel like this film, like obviously, like anyone who knows me knows I'm a big Christopher Nolan fan. I of course was rewatching Memento recently because of the new Blu-ray that just came out, and this film feels like a kind of like a more like hardcore like graphic version of Memento without the short-term memory loss, because both films are told in reverse chronology, and both are about husbands seeking revenge for their wife's rape and murder. But I don't want to give away like the twist of Memento, because there's a critical difference between the two, obviously, besides the short-term memory loss. They both share a lot of parallels, you know, because like it's both like, you know, like, you know, husbands or lovers like going, you know, like investigating and trying to solve, you know, like find the guy who raped and murdered my wife, or I guess in the case of Irreversible, just raped. But I feel like if I hadn't seen Memento before I saw this movie, I probably would have thought more highly of like its innovation, like the reverse chronology thing. But given that Memento was a year before, like it did come out before this movie, like I feel like it was like I said, a more hardcore like graphic version. That said, like I said, it's an incredibly well-made film, and I think what Noé was going for the whole time, like to kind of like look at this idea that like this one singular event, because like there's this whole like twist at the end that really like makes the thing actually really heartbreaking, And I don't want to spoil that. I don't know what you guys like policy on spoilers or anything is. But it's a very like emotionally engaging film. It's pretty traumatizing. I want to say like that's kind of the word I keep coming back to. And it's hard for me to like this movie and thus hard to really truly recommend it. But I do admire it a lot, because I think the acting in it is pretty extraordinary. I think the direction and like the craftsmanship between it is really good. Did I say just between it? Okay. Sorry. The craftsmanship of the film is excellent. Like I said, I feel like Gaspar Noé is a really underrated director. I feel like he's kind of in that Lars von Trier kind of category of like these like European provocateur directors who, like a lot of people, like, you know, normal people can't really get through their movies because they're very shocking. You know, like you have a lot of stuff like, you know, like Antichrist and Enter the Void and, you know, and so on and Irreversible and all that. But bottom line is I would definitely say this film is a must see, much like I would say Enter the Void is a must see. But it's not a film I would personally care to revisit, if only because I don't know if I could like get through that rape scene again without probably just like outright turning off the movie. Not because it's bad or anything, or because I feel like the film is like offensive or anything. Like it's a great movie that I can't enjoy because of how hard it is to get through. So I would definitely agree with it being in that list of like 1,001 movies you need to see. But I'll probably never watch it again. So that's just kind of my thesis on the film, which I feel like I just in a very long way just basically said I didn't like this movie, but it's really well made. So,
and I mean, everyone has movies like that. I mean, yeah, like, one of those movies for me is Antichrist.
Yeah, like that's it. You know, and like I said, like the Lars von Trier thing, I feel like Antichrist, I feel like I thought this movie was a bit more like profound than Antichrist for me. So Antichrist is beautifully shot and incredibly professionally well made, but I feel like there were times when that movie kind of flew off the rails a little bit, which is like the total opposite. Like these movies are kind of the opposite of how I felt about Dogtooth, which I know everybody loved Dogtooth, and I couldn't stand that movie.
Not on this podcast. I'm sorry. You're right, with friends. Please, young
man. We don't talk about that movie on this podcast.
Yeah. We should institute our
foolishness.
So like that, like, bottom line is that, you know, there are shocking movies that like you said, like it's like I said, like Antichrist or any of Noé's films or Lars von Trier's films that are, they're easy to admire and appreciate for their craftsmanship, the thought provoking nature of them. But they're hard to enjoy because of just like how tough they are. They're tough films to sit through. I mean, they're not easy, and they send normal, you know, like people who aren't really like big movie buffs, they send them like scurrying from the theater, you know, like people like flee, you know, like I can't tell you how many walkouts of Antichrist there were. Like, I think that by the end of it, I was probably like one of two people left in the theater because everybody, like it was a packed theater when I saw it. Like I was one of two people left when it ended, like everybody left the theater, and I felt like I definitely gave myself a pat on the back for making it through that movie. And I'll give myself, you know, another pat on the back for getting through Irreversible, but I don't know that I'll ever revisit it. I'd like to like watch some like special features or something of it to kind of check out like what Noé was like, what was he on about? Like what were his like artistic intentions and everything? Like I feel like that would be pretty interesting, but I don't know if I'll ever like watch this movie just because I don't know if I could like get through that kind of trauma again. So that's what I thought of Gaspar Noé's Irreversible.
Okay, so the first thing I want to say about this movie is that Antichrist is fucking awesome.
I would agree with that.
The number one movie of 2009. Yes. Anyway,
was it Moon your number one movie?
No, that was
Mine was the Hurt Locker, I'm not gonna lie.
Wait, was Moon the same year as
yes.
Antichrist?
Yeah, that was the same year.
Sorry, Antichrist was number two. I apologize.
Oh. Moon was fucking awesome.
Moon was amazing. I'm sorry. Anyway. What are we talking about? Gaspar Noé's
Irreversible.
The first thing while I was watching this, when actually it took a little bit to realize exactly how the structure of the movie was set up, in that it was this whole reverse storytelling, just like Nolan's Memento. And I don't know, that kind of... It has so many tangible... what are the words? So many things that kind of tie with Memento. I actually didn't even think of what Kevin was saying, the wife being raped and
the revenge
exactly
aspect.
That being
that was the first thing that came to my mind.
Well, with me, I guess it was more like, ooh, this is backwards. I remember that.
Well, that too. it just happens to also be backwards, but yeah, there's this guy and he's going after revenge.
Yes. But this movie, I don't know, the first thing that I thought was, why are they doing this? I actually even Googled it. I paused the movie and I Googled it and I was like, okay, was this before I keep trying to say
Memento.
Was this before Memento? Was it that Nolan just stole from this man outright? And
Nolan,
the answer is no.
This man.
It's the way around.
Exactly. So that, I don't know, kind of colored my view of this movie for a while. But after a while, I realized, you know what? Fuck that shit. This movie is extremely pretty. I will pull out the list here, right? You know, the list that we always pull out. It was extremely well acted, extremely well directed. The cinematography was fantastic. I mean, the way that this guy, I don't know if he had to have used CG in here as well, but like,
yeah,
he actually moved the camera the way that it looked some of the time so quickly and around and up and down. It was
that's interesting that you bring that up. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but they talk about that in the Enter the Void visual effects reel, how like a lot of it was kind of done like Citizen Kane kind of stuff, where like they actually like built there were a lot of overhead shots in Irreversible. I was just making sure like I remembered it correctly. It's a movie that I kind of want to like put a good chunk of it out of my mind, because I don't want to remember that rape scene. They basically like they did a lot of these like kind of like Citizen Kane style in camera effects. But you're right, there is a lot of like it's like a mixture of like in camera effects, like and like optical illusions mixed with CGI.
Yeah.
In both films, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, I am in the same boat with Andrew, in a sense that I have seen Enter the Void, but I've gone a little bit further than him. I think I've maybe reached a two-hour mark, but still haven't quite finished yet. But I think that movie is pretty fucking good. But just from a style point of view, I saw this movie, and within 5 seconds, I was like, this is a guy. Because you could just see it in the way... In nothing, you don't even have to look at anything other than the way that the camera moves. And once you look at the camera movement, you're like, this is Gaspar. Look at him.
Actually, by camera movement alone, especially the first act, you probably would have thought it was a Tony Scott film.
No, I thought it was... No, I knew. It definitely
well,
wait, has...
You mean with, like, the spin transitions? I was kind of thinking that at first. Like, I was like... Bloom transition. Spin transition. You have got to the other scene. I was half expecting Denzel Washington and Chris Pine to burst out of a train somewhere.
Tony Scott, like, I'm not gonna go there anymore. I've ruined his career as far as I'm concerned with the way I talk about his movies.
He got a new version of iMovie and was playing with it. He even There's more transitions there.
Spin transition.
I wonder if him and Ridley have conversations. They just go like, you know which movie I made this year? Did you make another one? Should you do the spin transition? Yes. Okay, don't talk to me.
I know, right? It's like, so what movie did you make, Ridley, this year? Oh, I just made this like movie about the Templars and religious conflict and everything. What'd you make? I made a movie about a train. It was
awesome.
And it's
awesome. Like a cannon.
Awesome. Anyways, which movie was that? Was it Pelham or Unstoppable?
Unstoppable. Dollars. Pelham was last year, the year before.
Yeah, that's right.
And we never talk about like, Pelham as well.
Anyways, Douglas, you were talking about the camera movement.
Sorry.
Sorry, no. Yes, the camera movement was.
No, yes.
You know that it's Noé from the camera movement.
Okay, so Gaspar Noé is a crazy son of a bitch, and that shows up very hugely in the first, I would say, 15 to 20 minutes, and the last. Especially in terms of the visuals. The middle of the movie is still very attractive, very odd in terms of the camera movement, but much more restrained. And you know, more along the lines of something you might see a regular person, or I shouldn't say regular, but
a normal person.
A non-French filmmaker.
That's what you should say.
A non-French filmmaker.
A normal person.
Do.
He ain't Jean-Luc Godard, after all.
Exactly. But so this story, as you say, it's a revenge movie, but the thing about this film is that it feels okay, so it moves backwards, and the revenge bit of the story is only really the first half. The second half is essentially just the lead up to all of that, but it's odd to have it that way because, well, the thing is, so the revenge piece is like really the I don't want to call it a protagonist because it's not a person, but it's the major theme that moves, that pushes this movie. It's a reason for this movie to be, essentially. And once you get past that, once you go backwards from the point of this is why this movie exists to, alright, let's set it up. It's like, why setting this up for me? I already got the payoff. I already know what's going to happen. And I kind of know, just from inferences and from things that I've seen, I know how everybody is related. I know the relationships. I know what happened. I know all of that good stuff. And so I felt like the second half was a little bit, I don't want to say unnecessary, but yeah, it was a little bit unnecessary.
It's weird having like the emotional payoff before they kind of develop your emotional connection to the characters.
Right.
And that's like, it reminds me like in Memento, to further kind of drive this comparison, like there's just like, I think my favorite scene of that whole movie is like when, I assume you've all seen it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. There's a scene where Guy Pearce and Carrie Ann Moss are like in bed, and he talks about like how he can't, like he has to remember every day that his wife's gone, and how like he doesn't know how, because of his condition of the short-term memory loss, he doesn't know how long she's been gone. Like it could have been just yesterday, or it could have been, you know, like 10 years ago. But he says like, how can I, you know, he says, how can I heal if I can't feel time? And that comes within the, and what's interesting is that comes within the first 30 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, time is, what did he say? Time is,
He said, I how can I heal if I can't feel time?
Oh no, I meant
if I don't
this
know,
movie, this one.
Time destroys everything.
Yeah, time destroys everything, yeah.
Yeah, so it's interesting, like I said, there's a lot of parallels between the two movies, and I think it was interesting for both Nolan and Noé, you know, to put that kind of emotional core. Like obviously Memento is more of a character study, whereas like within like a noir film, whereas like like Enter the, or not Enter the Void, Irreversible is more of like a revenge. It's like, it's more of like a philosophical look at, you know, like you said, like, you know, life altering events within a revenge film. And so it's just interesting for them both to put that like emotional core of the film, like with the characters, like near the beginning in the first half, and then have you kind of like go through and like, and then you're like understanding like what's leading up to that. I think Nolan's film is a bit more successful at creating an emotional connection to the character. And I'm not just saying that like as a, you know, as a fan of Christopher Nolan, but I do think that like Memento is, like I said, given that its structure and that it is a character study first and foremost, and not as much of an idea film as Irreversible to me is, it's a bit more successful at creating that emotional core. But I do think it's interesting that they both chose to kind of go that route. And that's the danger of that reverse chronology thing, is like you end up with the payoff before the buildup. And yeah, it's like, what do you make of that?
Yeah, and the truth is, as I say, it works much better in Nolan's film than Noé's. But the thing about this one is that, and the reason for that is that in Nolan's, everything kind of ties back. So when
right.
you get to the end, you're
right.
still
like
things
in that
discuss.
Penultimate scene.
There's the aha moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, it's not only that, but like just like I think a lot of it has to do with Guy Pearce's performance. Just like, you know, and when he's the guy he thinks is John G, and he says like, I want my fucking life back. And it's just, it's a really, and then Joe Pantoliano is of course like revealing the whole truth of everything to him, and it's like the guy's world is like crumbling around him, you know, but the thing is because of his short-term memory loss, like if we then lead up to the transition to the scene before it, and he's forgotten everything that Joe Pantoliano has just told him. So that's the thing, is like he can't remember that. So that it's a different, it's just different structure. I think like that's the key difference in what makes that emotional connection work, because like you're as disoriented through Memento as Guy Pearce is because of like the way it's almost like a POV of his condition. Whereas like with Noé's film, it's very kind of like, it's very straightforward. It's not as, it doesn't have as many like kind of like, it's not like a puzzle like Memento is.
Yeah, but I think that also comes with the fact that in Memento, there's still things that, even though in Noé's film, it's the same way in that you're discovering things as you go along with this reverse chronology, but in Memento, like Damien said, and like how you've said, they are still pieces missing, because not only are you as a viewer missing them, the character in Memento is missing them, and he's still searching for them. Whether he's found them before, we don't know, but that's not the point.
Yeah, the point is like the growth of the character.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry to go off on tangents. It's just an interesting parallel.
Anything else you wanted to say about this, Douglas?
I feel like we stole your thunder. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. What was I saying? Essentially, like that. There is no... once you've gotten halfway into this movie, there is nothing more that you can discover. It is just...
Do you think the movie would have worked better if it were shorter?
It could have, but at the same time... what I want to say is that I am really nitpicking. And I did enjoy this movie. I like this movie a lot. I do have to say though, I didn't like the end, the very end. That felt of not forced.
The whole thing about the pregnancy.
Yeah, that. Definitely, it was just like, okay, we're going to try very hard to specifically tie this back to make you feel something.
That was like they were just beating you over the head with like the whole like life altering events thing at that point?
Yeah, at that point that's what was happening.
I can see that. Yeah. I can see that. I thought it was pretty well done, but like I think like it verged on histrionics at that point.
It verges
like there's like that scene in particular is pretty, it teeters on that brink of like this could be laughable or this could be really profound. Mm-hmm. And it falls somewhere in the middle. Like it's not quite one or the other.
Yeah. The one thing that I would say about this movie is that I feel that the narrative, the way it's set up, the way that it's moving backwards, it's anachronistic, is that is more... I feel like the reasoning for it is a bit more aesthetic than anything else. And
yeah.
I feel that... I don't want to say that it should be told the right way around, but...
It feels unnecessary?
It feels a little bit unnecessary. It feels as if, like I said, the only reason that he did it, that Gaspar did that...
So it's just a stylistic choice.
Exactly,
then.
A stylistic choice. And it doesn't serve the story any great purpose. And so I'm not wronging him. I'm not going to say that he shouldn't have done it, because guess what? I thought it was pretty too. But... There are those couple of things that I felt were problematic. But overall, I did enjoy this movie. Even though I have to say the second half was a little bit less so. But this was still a very good movie.
I'd agree with the second half being lesser than the first half. Like, that's for sure.
Okay.
Oh, and the rape scene was fantastic.
I think you should go first, Andrew. Go ahead. I mean, there's something else that I want to talk about.
I completely echo most of the things Douglas has mentioned about this film. I think that my only problems with this film come towards the second half of the movie, where you're thinking, as you said, you've already gotten your payoff. Why am I seeing all of this build up? But at the same time, I feel that if they had cut the movie, like, right at the end of the rape, or, like, a few minutes after where you're seeing them at the party, you still would have felt a feeling of emptiness, like, less satisfaction. Like, there was no way he could have ended it properly, having already decided to do this reverse chronology thing. However, at the same time... I love the reverse chronology thing.
Yeah.
As Douglas is saying, it's really pretty. It works well in the story, and it does something really great. What I really loved about the first half, especially when the movie just begins and you're going around, has to do with the actual camera. This movie, the camera is your character. It's right. Towards that whole first third, chronologically, after the rape, when Vincent Cassel and the ex-husband, as I'm being told, of Monica Bellucci are running around trying to find the rectum and get revenge. Yes, I will keep saying the rectum and you will giggle.
No, but even better, you have to find the rectum.
The camera is shaking to God's hell. It's going up around in circles, and it's all about what Vincent Cassel is feeling at that moment. He is completely disoriented. Even though he has this one dead set goal that he's on, you know that it's a passionate decision that he's made, and maybe if he had sat down and thought about it, he may not have made the same decision, or he would have done things slightly differently. But it's his complete mental and spiritual orientation, which is what you're seeing with the camera movement. And it's so easily understood by the time that when you get to the rape scene, where the camera for the very first time sits dead still.
Yeah.
You can see that that's now talking about Monica Bellucci and the guy who's raping her. It's so clear-cut and so defined. And then all of the third act, where the camera isn't as crazy as the first act, and you're just seeing this romance between Monica Bellucci and Vincent Cassel, and how they end up going to this party that then takes them to the rape scene. It's all very clear-cut cinematography and camera work. It's one of my favorite parts of the film, my favorite aspect of the movie. Otherwise, everything that's been mentioned already, I just want to add that bit.
Can I cut in 1 second and just make one mention, quick mention, to say that I'm not sure if I've said this before, but Vincent Cassel in this movie is fucking superb.
Like, definitely. I've always been a fan of his, and I didn't know he was that good.
he's incredible. And And it's amazing how well the chemistry between he and his wife works in this. Yeah. Like, because, like, a lot of times, like off-screen couples, like, don't really, for some reason, they don't really work on screen. But, mm-hmm. I mean, like, I said, for anybody who doesn't know, like, Vincent Cassel and Monica Bellucci are married in real life.
Yeah.
But it's, like, their chemistry is just fantastic. Like, you really buy into them being a couple. And, yes, Vincent Cassel, like, he's just, like, he's godlike in this thing. Like, and that's not even hyperbole. Like, he's just amazing. So.
Right. The first time I saw this movie, I had a lot of issues with the movie.
How long ago was that, by the way?
It's about three years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. So I saw it, and most of my issues had to do with the camera work and some decisions made at the very beginning and very end. I didn't appreciate them showing their hands so early. When the movie starts, it reverses the credits. I still, even not watching it a second time,
I forgot about that. Still, that's do really not awesome.
They should not have done that. No, I don't agree that that's awesome at all.
I would agree with him. Like, that's kind of,
they're showing their hand. And
that's unnecessary. Like, they should have given you a few seconds to build that up to be a surprise.
The whole, I know, understand that this is his style, the whole swirling shit around for no fucking reason. It is, guys, like, honestly, it's unnecessary. I know Andrew is saying that, you know, for the first half of the movie, it's erratic and it is trying to convey a sense of the character. That's fine, but you don't need to do that in order to get that sense. Memento.
Yes, you don't need to, but he made a decision to do it.
No, Andrew, here's how I explain it. Damon is French.
And it is a poor decision. He did it, and it is a poor decision.
So you're saying, like, the reverse chronology is, like, completely unnecessary and
No. I'm not talking about the reverse chronology. That is,
are you talking about the camera work?
I'm talking, like, just about the camera work.
Okay, gotcha.
And I'm going to have to watch this movie again, because I'm going to watch it in the correct order.
You're going to press reverse on your...
Is it like the Memento DVD, which had a chronological order special feature?
What's that?
Does it have, like, a... Like, does the DVD have a feature like the Memento did?
No, I don't think so, but I'm going to spend the time.
You're just
going to
press it and rewind.
No, I'm going to spend the time and cut it in the...
Okay, I got you. So you're going to watch... You're going to go to the end, watch a scene, rewind, watch the next scene, like
no,
that?
No, I'm going to physically cut up the movie play it back in the right order.
Okay.
The first time, like, the very first time I saw the movie... those were my major issues. Just the camera work and the fact that there was... at the end, the 2001 Space Odyssey thing, when you saw that poster, I thought that he was just being crazy for the sake of being crazy, because I didn't understand, A, that he's French, and B, that French directors are crazy.
The poster was pretty
heavy. Hold on, Kevin. Let Damien go.
And see that this is his style. This is just something that he does because he thinks it's cool, and it isn't. Guy, just calm down with the camera. Just keep it steady, right? Now that I've rewatched it, it's funny that Andrew asked me to rewatch this movie a week after this game called Dead Island.
They, I saw that trailer, and that's fantastic.
They did the reverse thing with the trailer, and after I saw that trailer, went back and I watched this movie, and I think that if the director had spent some time, especially in the last third of the movie, when everything was calm and he had already conveyed all the information that we needed, right? Because he gave us the who, why, when, what, right? But we didn't know the how and the how, and we were just seeing, what these people's life were before all this crazy shit happened. If he had reversed some of those scenes, especially the scenes where there was no one talking, So instead of having swirly transitions, have them reverse the people and back into another scene. So
okay. so make it look like they're like they're actually like walking like backwards and everything.
No, so that they look like they're walking backwards.
Like the Dead Island thing.
Right, into the scenes. That I'm pretty sure that would have. I feel it would make the movie just a little bit better, and if you would calm down the camera work. The only thing that, like the rape scene, that is what the reason I saw this movie the first time was everyone, like, this movie was the rape movie. That's how everyone explained it to me. This is the movie with the rape.
Is there something the rape you need to tell us?
Yeah, it's the movie with the rape. And I like rape.
you heard Monica Bellucci had rape, and you were like,
sure I've told you guys
that might work.
No,
we're like,
the only thing that disgusted me was at the start of the movie when he was beating that guy's face in, when his bottom jaw quivered. The first time I saw him, I think that's where he stepped over the line there, and by the time he got to the race, I'm like, that is horrific, but he did something in like the first 5 minutes of this movie that I'm like, guys, really this is like a joke compared to what he did to that guy's face. I'm unlike you guys, I think that the last third of the movie is completely necessary, with the exemption of the twirly shot nonsense. It is necessary because you have to establish these characters as regular people. You assume that they're regular people and they're put in extraordinary circumstances and they did what they did, because you saw that. But without knowing that they were, not, crazy bastards from the beginning, it adds emotional weight to all of the decisions that they made, at the start of the movie. That being said, the movie could have been shorter. It could have. The entire party scene could have been cut out of this movie.
And
no one would have missed it. That's like 10-15 minutes. And then there's another additional 5-10 minutes of him just shaking the camera for no freaking reason. I know that he's French and crazy. Clearly, I have to. There's a pass. I mean, there's nothing I can do.
I have a question. I know you don't like the swirly camera, but are you okay with the flashy ending?
Not the.
Why
did I even listen to Doug? Ignore it, Douglas. this movie is really good, and I'd watch this movie again. If only to do what I said I'd do, cut it up properly.
I'd buy this on Blu-ray.
I hope it comes out in Blu-ray so that I can watch it, because dear God, standard if it's horrible. The performance is funny. I was waiting for someone to say something about the performances, and all three of you guys spoke. And then it was right at the very end, you're like, all right.
Oh, no.
And the guy's doing the acting. They're like, really good. Like,
Gaspar Noé was the star of this movie.
Exactly. Like, or the director, and he's reversing off a straightforward movie. Like, that is what's great here. Like, no, guys. All that acting that took place. Memento is better. Far better. It is so,
Memento is one of my favorite movies ever.
Superior.
That's like a top 20 for me.
I do think it's better, but I think this movie cuts it close.
No, it's movie.
Like it's I think its differences is what shows them apart. Memento is a noir detective movie that I love. This is the messed up one night screws your life movie I love.
Yeah.
Because every time you rewatch Memento, there's little things that you can pick out.
Yeah.
And you go aha every single time. You never watch this movie ever again.
What was that, Kevin?
I was gonna say Memento is one of those movies I've seen it I want to say about 5 times now, and I definitely think every time I see it, it almost I sometimes wonder do I have short term memory loss, because every time I see it I'm like, oh yeah, that part, that clue, that blah blah blah. With Irreversible, there's nothing really new to explore with that one, other than just kind of admire the direction, but So yeah, that's all I want to say.
So I think we can basically just wrap this up, and I guess we've all agreed that as harsh a movie as this can be, it definitely is a movie that if you're a film lover, you should probably watch at one point in your life.
Yeah.
But at this point, we're going to have to say goodnight. So Kevin, is there anywhere on the internet you want to point people to before we go?
Yeah, I've got, of course, my Twitter at Kevin K, spelled K-E-V-I-N-N-K. So Twitter at Kevin K, K-E-V-I-N-N-K. And my blog, which I'm going to be getting back to updating regularly, is Film Studies. Yeah, Film Studies and Other Shenanigans at blogspot.com. And then I have my Tumblr, which you know, whatever. that's just a place where I get to like blog like random photos of random stuff that I think is cool, but whatever. So those are the two places you can find me. And so yeah.
As usual, you can find the podcast at gmarinreviews.com, and you can find me on Twitter at gmarinreviews. Douglas is DJR, lost his name. Damien is nowhere. And that's not like to say twitter.com/nowhere. He is nowhere to be found. thank you for listening. I hope you come back next week. And that's enough. So good night.
A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh. Is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers woo, they still say I love you. All that you can rely. No matter what the future brings, as time goes by.